I'm John Batchelor. This is the new John Batchelor Show on CBS Audio Network, and my colleague, Bill Whalen of the Hoover Institution. Bill is the podcaster of Matters in Policy and Politics. Now he is also the videocaster of The Goodfellas, his conversation with his colleagues. We turn to Bill's very careful construction, however, of three senior members of California's political class. How senior? 87 years old. In fact, Bill calls it the 87 Club. This is serious business, however, because he's applying it to the quandary of immigration, of migration, of the crisis on the border, not only in Texas, but also Arizona, New Mexico, and California. Bill, I allow you to reveal the 87 Club. Who are they, and what is the significance in of California history of their politics? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. The 87 Club is alphabetically Willie Brown, who was the Speaker of the California State Assembly from the mid-1970s to the mid-1990s, nicknamed the Ayatollah of the Assembly for his rather iron-fisted rule of the chamber. And Willie was also the inspiration for term limits imposed on California in 1990 because conservatives just could not find any other way to get rid of him. So Willie Brown's the first member. The second member is one currently in politics, Senator Dianne Feinstein, who as of last weekend is now California's longest-serving senator, John. And then the third member is my former boss, Pete Wilson, governor of California from 1991 to 1999, but his office holding in California goes back to actually 1966 when he first went to the Assembly where he worked with Willie Brown for 4 years. So that's the 87 Club, Willie Brown, Dianne Feinstein, and Pete Wilson.
So collectively, they have more years on the planet than the United States has more years on the planet. They overwhelm us with their age. Now, you mentioned, perhaps ironically, that the success of these three politicians would not be possible in 2021. Do I read you correctly?
Yeah, so let's begin with Feinstein, who is obviously the source of a lot of – we had this previous conversation you and I did. There are Democrats on the left who want to get rid of her. Why? She's just not sufficiently progressive. So she could not last if she were starting out in state politics because she first made her foray in 1990, John. That was her first introduction to state politics. She went to a Democratic state convention that year and told the activists that they were absolutely wrong on the death penalty, capital punishment. Well, John, if you came out in support of the death penalty in California right now, the Democratic side, you would be dead on arrival as far as your candidacy. So she could not exist in this day and age. Willie Brown was, he drove conservatives crazy, but Willie was kind of pragmatic at the end of the day in terms of getting deals done. He liked to cut deals, and I don't think that that would be too welcome in today's Democratic Party. He and Pete Wilson did a deal in the early 1990s, which was a combination of raising taxes and cutting spending. And he went nowhere far enough on raising taxes, as Democrats would like then, as we've seen in this current day and age with Democrats proposing tax increases left and right, including the president rolling out some today. That style would not be welcome. Pete Wilson could probably still get reelected statewide in California because he was always very clever at tacking to left and right, ultimately down the middle. His problem, John, would be if he wanted to take the next step in national politics. Wilson was pro-choice. As an office holder, he ran for president briefly in 1995. It didn't go very far. In 1996, John, he tried to change the Republican National Convention's language and its platform on abortion. He got absolutely murdered for trying it, and I suspect he would get murdered for trying it again. The party remains steadfast pro-life when it comes to national candidates. So that's how all three would be kind of boxed in, if you will.
However, my memory, I'm old enough to remember all three politicians, including that surprising victory for Pete Wilson in 1994. My memory is that all three have been successful through the decades because they compromised or conciliated or in some fashion dealt with opponents. That is no longer the case to my reading of California politics. You're only rewarded if you're on the extreme left of the party.
Yeah, these three are not ideologues in that sense. They're more pragmatist in terms of trying to reach consensus and trying to get things done, if you will. And again, in this age where just the both sides, keep in mind, both sides just go hard left and hard right. And just like in World War One warfare, John, if you try to go out in the no man's land in the middle, it usually doesn't go too well. It's the style that California has certainly embraced. And that's really not to the state's advantage, I think, right now. We're just too dug in our respective positions. There's not enough politicians coming into the middle just trying to figure out what is, in a consensus fashion, what is best for the state.
Let's look at the California challenges. Not the least, of course, is the recall vote the recall petition that still has not been validated, but we can presume there will be a recall vote. I can only guess that all three of these politicians would regard this as unhelpful when it comes to success in California. Let's look at the statistics that say that people are leaving California, particularly large businesses leaving California. The one that comes to mind is Hewlett-Packard, I believe Oracle as well. Also, these three politicians would regard that as failure. And then finally, what you'd have to say is the breakdown of conversation in all parts of California over the homeless. There is no active conversation. I can't imagine Willie Brown tolerating the streets of San Francisco, nor Dianne Feinstein putting up with what you'd have to say is a DA who has creative ideas about what to do with felons. That seems like another galaxy to these three politicians.
Yeah. Now, Willie Brown was the mayor of San Francisco, John, when he left Sacramento. He ran San Francisco from late 1990s until the early 2000s, replaced by some guy named Gavin Newsom. Gee, what happened to him? Anyway, so Willie, there was a homeless problem under Willie. There's been a chronic homeless problem in San Francisco for decades now, so he's not as clean as we'd like. But I'd like to think the three of them, with their combined wisdom and also just their natural inclinations, they would not tolerate what's going on in California right now, where you have the city of San Francisco spending $50,000 to $60,000 a person on homelessness in that city. Los Angeles, its population continues to swell. I think it's 66,000, slowly but surely headed to 90,000, John. And just again, not to solve it. I'd like to think those three wise people could at least sit down and try to find a solution, at least try to take us on a path from something that's not working right now.
The triumvirate of Wilson, Brown, and Feinstein. Now we come to what Bill identifies as the new triumvirate. Certainly powerful politicians. The Vice President of the United States, Kamala Harris, the Governor, Gavin Newsom, and the new U.S. Senator, Alex Padilla, whom I know least. How do these three work together, or at all? Are they working together?
I don't know if they're really working together right now. Now, California is doing very well under the Biden administration. I think the state's receiving something like $26 billion with the B under the stimulus package. And the state's going to do very well if infrastructure goes through. More money for high-speed rail, God help us all. But I'm not sure the three are really in sync right now, if you will. They're in three different positions. Newsom right now is in a position really of kind of fighting for his life because, as you mentioned in the beginning of this broadcast, he faces quite likely recall later this year. Padilla is new to the Senate because he replaced Kamala Harris, who was appointed by Newsom to her job. He's still kind of fitting into the Senate, but he's made immigration one of his first issues. And then there's Kamala, who has been tasked with border policy under the Biden administration. Kind of makes me wonder what bet she lost, or this is the president's way of getting back at her for saying mean things about him at that first debate. She is now the border czar, if you will, who does not plan to go to the border. So it's a very curious mix. And the question is, John, with these three, but really Padilla and Harris, because they're in Washington trying to solve this problem right now or address it, do they really kind of have what it takes to do a sensible fix on immigration, or are they just going to give a lot of lip service and just let the situation drag on?
What I've learned about California politics is that you cannot fail if you're a Democrat, and a Democrat with a high profile and name recognition. I don't know if that was true in the Brown, Wilson, and Feinstein age, but it's certainly true today. Alex Padilla, what does he represent? What does he have a theme the way you could say Gavin Newsom, his theme is that great hair, and the vice president doesn't need a theme. She's heir to the throne.
The theme for Padilla is a little similar to the theme for Kamala Harris, John. It's one of history. He is California's first Latino senator. His first floor statement he gave as a senator, he introduced himself in Spanish. So this is an enormous statement about identity politics in California. But the question is going to be, what does he really delve into? Dianne Feinstein has for decades now been the person who delivers on Senate material. And that other senator is Barbara Boxer, Kamala Harris. They're a little more, shall we say, decorative. They get very angry about issues. They get very vocal when it's judicial nominations and so forth. But they're not the people you turn to do the kind of heavy lifting. That's Feinstein. So Padilla is now in that decorative position. And given that his first bill that he co-introduced and his committee chairman, subcommittee chairmanship right now has to do with immigration, so he's going to be a very visible voice when it comes to immigration. But the question is, what kind of immigration reform does he want to pursue, John? The bill which he's involved in with some House Democrats, well, actually Elizabeth Warren and some House Democrats, I think Joaquin Castro is the most prominent one on that side. This would create a path to citizenship for about 5 million undocumented residents in this country, supposedly frontline workers, if you will. I'm very curious what the definition of frontline worker will be. But they're talking pathway to citizenship right away. That's dead on arrival with Republicans, John. So the only way you can get that done is if you kill the filibuster in the Senate. So that's kind of burning down the village to save it, if you will. So this is what I'm curious about with Padilla and Harris as well. If they do want to propose immigration reform, if they do want to get something out of the Senate moving forward, do they just want to do something just absolutely partisan and absolutely muscular and try to get through in a 51-50 vote? Or are they going to turn to Republicans like Marco Rubio, who was part of the Gang of Eight last time the Senate went down this road, and try to do something that, dare we say, we would call consensus or bipartisan?
The 87 Club. If we could imagine the 87 Club sitting down with Gavin Newsom, what would they tell him about this recall petition and the recall vote ahead?
I think that Pete Wilson would say, buddy, you got it coming to you. I could tell you this. When Newsom came into office, he reached out to Governor Wilson, and he asked for advice. Smart governors do this. They ask their predecessors for advice. And Wilson's advice was very simple. He said, you have to understand that you're governing one state, but you're really governing about eight states rolled into one. And I think one of the problems Newsom has encountered as governor is just the way he looks, the way he acts, and what he propounds, John. He seems to be the governor of Marin County, more so than the governor of California. So I think Newsom would tell him, Wilson would tell Newsom that, you know, gee, you kind of erred and lost your way. I think what Willie Brown would tell Newsom is you better take this seriously, which I think Newsom is. But, you know, Willie Brown used to write a column for the Chronicle. They just pulled the plug on it a couple months ago. But he was amazingly pragmatic in that column and just very, you know, just calling out Democrats on a lot of BS, like identity politics, don't glorify, you know, looting in the name of social justice. I think he told Kamala Harris she should not run for vice president. That one I don't get. And I think he would have told Newsom that, look, the parallel to 2003, the last time California had a recall, still holds. That, you know, Gray Davis, the governor at the time, did not take the thing seriously at first, and it had more legs, more stamina than he thought. I think that's what Willie would tell Gavin as well, that, look, at, you know, when 2 million signatures are collected, people are upset, generally so. So don't dismiss it as partisan. Don't dismiss it as QAnon or the Proud Boys or anything like that. Understand that there are people seriously upset, both in the condition of the state, but also your conduct as governor.
Bill Whalen of the Hoover Institution. He is the host of the podcast Matters of Policy and Politics, writing most recently at Defining Ideas about the 87 Club, the senior counselors of California. We're going to turn to national politics next, because the border crisis also includes California's border with Mexico. I'm John Batchelor. This is the new John Batchelor Show.